Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit Michter's.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte. When I'm not on the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you're hearing here and working with my clients, which include chefs, restaurateurs, big brands, startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Today's Word of Mouth will be a very different kind of adventure. Anna Weinberg, the San Francisco restaurateur behind beloved institutions, Marlowe, the Cavalier, and Park Tavern. She and I, we go on a little adventure on her nightly rounds on July 10th, one fine SF summer Friday, and you're welcome to join in. Anna's in New York City tonight to cook with former mentor and boss Chef Jonathan Waxman at the James Beard House with her partners, pastry chef Emily Lucchetti and chef Jennifer Puccio, and this is my way of welcoming Anna to town. We talk working with Waxman, the formidable hashtag Fempire, that is female empire, that makes a big night hospitality group, and don't you forget it, plus eggs, and more eggs, pre-trip weigh-ins, how strep throat nearly stopped Anna from meeting her future husband, and how she started her career as a VJ. With that, I'm so pleased to welcome people we like, Anna Weinberg. We're at Marlowe in San Francisco with Anna Weinberg, the restaurateur and the owner. Hey, Anna.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to San Francisco.
We're doing something a little bit different this time around. Since she has a fempire.
I do.
A female empire. We're going to pop over to each one of her
restaurants. We're going to do a fempire bar crawl.
Yes.
That's what's happening today.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And so we have here, what did we order?
So we're drinking the Baker right now, and the Baker is actually named for Emily Lucchetti, who was part of our fempire, a very important part. Emily's our pastry chef, and for those of you who don't know who Emily is, she's kind of the adult supervision around here. She's amazing. She was at Stars with Jeremiah Tower and James Beard award-winning pastry chef, and she joined our group last year. And we're super excited to have her, and this is her favorite cocktail, so we named it the Baker. And it's Aperol, Aperol, grapefruit, lemon, lime, and dickel rye.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's absolutely delicious. It's like you took grapefruit and just made it on.
Well, we wanted to make a girly drink, but with brown spirits, right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of something that people would usually think vodka's in, but, you know, we wanted you to just harden up a little bit and drink some bourbon.
You guys have a really fun time naming your drinks, by the way.
We have a fun time naming everything.
A beverage called Grinder.
yeah. And yes, it is like the app. That's exactly right.
Where is that, the grinder?
The grinder is here. It's Rittenhouse rye whiskey, vermouth, yellow chartreuse, and orange bitters. Yeah.
And why did that one get to be called the grinder?
Well, you know what? Why did it get to be called the grinder? You know why? We were up very, very late one night when we were opening this restaurant, drinking a lot of rosé. And he shall remain nameless, but our bar manager, I looked over and he was on Grindr. I'm like, you're not paying attention. Make me a drink. So I made a drink and he was on Grindr. So I'm like, this is the Grindr. So now you can do both. You control for dudes and make me a cocktail.
Excellent.
So that's how that came about.
So this is a new space.
This is. So we feel so lucky. We feel like Marlowe kind of finally has, you know, the home that it deserves. Marlowe was born a block away, and it was a really small little space, and it's kind of a challenging little space, but, you know, it was ours, and we loved it. It was home. We actually found out in the press that they were tearing the building down, which was really scary because we, you know, if people know what's going on in San Francisco right now, there's so much growth, and we thought, oh no, we're going to be left without a home, and, you know, the only spaces left will be these kind of brand new construction, and that's just not what we wanted. So it seemed to be the right time for Loretta Keller, who was in this space before us, to kind of to sell. So we feel really, really lucky that she did.
So you proposed it to...
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I knew that she had a lot going on, and she had a new restaurant, a big catering company, so I just thought maybe, you know, you can't hurt to ask. Yeah, the timing was right for her. So we moved down the block, but we still have 16 months or so left until they tear the building down. So we decided to just do a little burger shop pop-up down there called Marlow Burger. So we sort of accidentally opened two restaurants this year.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a little crazy.
And everyone loves burgers. And you have the best burger in town.
I think so. People love our burger, and I think it's because I love it because it's, I know this is going to sound really silly, but really eatable, because it's only a 4-ounce patty, so you never get that kind of like meat juice bread bun. It stays together really well, and Jen's horseradish aioli is to die for. So it's, you know, it's delicious. It's a great burger.
Okay, so the last Marlow was born out of a failure.
See, okay, yes. So the last Marlow was South before it was Marlow. And South was my first restaurant in San Francisco. Sorry, I'm playing with my silverware. I'm getting in trouble with her. South was my first restaurant in San Francisco, and South was an Australian restaurant. And I am so brilliant that I did an Australian restaurant right at the height, the sort of frenzy of the local sustainable movement. So, you know, as people are kind of just championing local farms, I'm shipping shit across the world. So, you know, I think some of the stuff we did was really, really fun. It wasn't right for San Francisco. San Francisco loves what's born here, and it should, because what's born here is amazing. And so, you know, I managed to get a 2-year focus group as to what my neighbors really wanted, and that's what Marlow became.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Nobody cared about an Australian restaurant.
Well, now they do, but you're like 5 years too early, actually.
Maybe. Yeah. I just think, I'll take that. That's nice.
Yeah. So cool. You learned about that San Francisco folks care about local.
Yeah.
And were there other lessons learned?
Well, gosh, so many.
And while we talk about lessons learned, because it's a tough topic, we're going to dive into the very untough deviled eggs.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, at all of our restaurants, we have a signature roast chicken and a signature deviled egg. So prepare to get really full, because I'm going to be feeding you. So the one here is a warm deviled egg, and it's with the melted provolone, jalapeno, and bacon. So, do you like?
Oh, yeah.
Good, 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 good. And then also I've got some of Jen's baked oysters. And I love this because, you know, Jen's from the East Coast, so these are a real nod to her kind of East Coast culinary roots. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a delicious clam chowder. It's like a riff on a clam chowder, I should say.
Yeah, I want clam chowder inside of an oyster shell.
Right. Well, you have it now. You have it.
Okay. So this is very comforting.
Oh, great. And then and now, wow. and these are our Brussels sprout chips, which we serve at the bar at all three of our restaurants, because they're just like salty and delicious and crunchy and all that stuff.
They are like the seaweed of the land.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And,
so
but, yeah. And people think that they're doing something healthy, but it's barely a vegetable anymore. It's basically a receptacle for oil and salt.
Heck yeah.
Right?
That is delicious.
Good, good. And I really like it with this cocktail too, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, this baked oyster looks really extra luscious. Sometimes baked oysters are a shadow of their former selves.
You know, I would agree with you. Generally, like, oysters don't really need to be messed with. But we wanted to do something a little heartier so that people had an option, you know, to kind of still have oysters if they didn't feel like raw oysters. And this is kind of perfect for the, you know,
oh, it's so warm,
the chilly San Francisco summer.
Yeah. I landed here just like,
it's bloody cold here.
A few hours ago from LA.
Yeah, I know, right? What? Welcome to winter.
What is going on?
Uh-huh. Yep.
I had to tell my Uber to turn off the air conditioning.
It's so funny. So, yeah. The other really fun thing about moving from down the street is we never had a liquor license before. We were only wine and beer.
Really?
Yes. So,
well, you're such a cocktails kind of gal.
I am such a cocktails kind of a gal. By the way, we've known each other for 4 minutes and she's already figured that out. Definitely a cocktails kind of girl.
I did my research. Yes.
Cocktail research is one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. Anthony Martinez, who's our bar manager. It's fantastic.
That guy over there?
Yes. Oh, okay. I think I just gave up the grinder guy. No. Sorry, Anthony.
Everybody come by for their good-looking man behind the bar.
But all the men behind the bar are good. I love the bar staff here. We're wonderful people.
This is great. There's a lot of the oyster, the filling has a lot of acidity and spice to it, so it's... Yeah. It is a flavorful, creamy glob of goodness.
I am thrilled that you like it.
So other lessons learned from the South.
Well, I mean, most of them were kind of boring lessons in terms of just running. You know, really learning how to run a business. You know, when you're running a business that's going under, you have to learn to be very, very lean. So I think it taught me a lot about being an operator. You know, once you learn to operate something that really, that you have no cash flow, no top line, you can really be a much more efficient restaurateur.
That's so a really cool it way
wasn't
of putting
a, it. It wasn't a lot of fun, but, you know, you also learn that, you know, shit, when the going gets tough, you're the one that has to work there, you know?
Yeah.
You can't be employing people. So, you know, it was some tough lessons.
Yeah.
It was also really great because, you know, after Marlo, my husband, whose background is venture capital, decided to, who's actually sitting right over there enjoying the cocktail, decided to work together. So that was really great because he came in and really put structure around the business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, was able to kind of put us in a position to be successful. So, and also, you know, it's fun to work together because everybody who's a restaurateur knows that unless you work together in the restaurant, you never see each other. So it was a lot of great things. You know, that first little baby Marlo down the road it's got like a real special place in my heart.
How did you meet your husband?
We met in New York City. We were actually set up on a blind date, which I did not show up for because I had strep throat. So our good friend that set us up decided to get James absolutely shit-faced.
Apparently that good friend also tried to date you?
Well, maybe. Okay, but he might listen to this. Yeah, no, he did. But, oh, no, he dated every single one of my friends. So I said to him, you know, you owe me. Come on, I've set you up with all these great women. Where's my sin? So we got James completely shit-faced and decided it would be a good idea to come to my apartment, which was a 9-floor walk-up in Chinatown in New York City. And my now husband was actually on crutches because he had, I don't know, he'd broken his ankle or something like that. So yeah, he crushed up 9 flights of stairs to meet me to it, and then I promptly slammed the door in his face. Because as any woman would, when she's like been in bed sick for 4 days, it's not when you want to meet.
It's amazing he was, that's great, yeah.
I know, although as I always said, well, I hadn't eaten for 4 days, so at least I was skinny. Yeah.
So
that was it. It was really, honestly, it was love at first sight.
But from that doorway or from the later on the party?
Well, that doorway because I was pretty hopped up on lots of painkillers. So, yeah, that was... No, and then I went to a party and a couple of days later at our friend's house. And that was really it. I moved to San Francisco 3 months later.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep, that was it.
Wow. So then what, was there like a, did he ask you out on a date or like what sort of happened after that?
I don't know whether there was dating. There was just, we were just sort of together from that point on. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So then moved to San Francisco. Because in New York you were working with Jonathan Weissman.
So I was. Jonathan, who's sort of my adoptive father really and father mentor.
His restaurant is deeply comfortable and delicious.
I love Barbudo. Barbudo is home for me. When I get off the plane from New York, it's kind of like going to my apartment. That's where I go. That's my home base. Mm-hmm. He's such a special person in the industry. They don't make him like that anymore. His depth of knowledge about everything, about wine, about the business. Just, you know, I don't know whether we do that anymore. I don't know how his knowledge is so well-rounded. so well traveled, and also just kind of there's no one's food I prefer.
Yeah, it's like straight, like you think it's like chicken and pasta, but it's insanely.
It's perfectly executed. There's generally not more than 3 ingredients on a plate, and it's everything you want. You know, it's everything you want every day, which I think is just, you know, so many chefs' egos are in their own way, I think. And Jonathan's, I think, gone to a place in his, you know, in his cooking where there's just no ego. There's just, hey, I want this to be delicious.
So when you were there, what was your role at the restaurant?
So I was the maitre d', and I was absolutely spoiled by Jonathan. I couldn't work for anybody else. He decided that I was the person and the energy he wanted on his door, and as Jonathan will tell you, all the staff hated me. Everybody else hated me because I waltzed in whenever I wanted.
Uh-huh.
I left whenever I wanted. I had random like shady deals all over town, so I could use the Pulitzer Soho House if I got people in, and so you know. But he didn't care. He was really the person that put me on the path, because I was definitely a little bit lost career-wise.
Yeah.
You know, as a lot of people in hospitality will tell you, you get to a certain amount of years as a floor manager and you're like, you know, what's next? What else is there? This is a little bit kind of depressing because there's not a lot of upward mobility. And anyway, so he really taught me to focus on the things I was really good at, hire around my weaknesses. And sorry, I'm playing with my cutlery again. I'm going to get in trouble.
We're doing a little experiment here. I don't want my listeners to hate us.
I know, exactly. Sorry. I credit a lot, you know, a lot of my career to him and to that time in my life.
Wow, so just you were like, you were that maitre d' that really was that adult that everyone was friends with, you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh no, absolutely. It was really, really fun. It's such a great way. I mean, I love running a door. I love running a completely chaotic door.
Yeah.
You know, and our restaurants definitely have... it's really sad to me that kind of... people don't really have those kind of maitre d's anymore.
Yes.
And we really try to... I mean, I have 3 girls that run the door at each one of my restaurants, and they're more like a concierge. I mean, they are texted at all hours of the night to, you know, by our regulars and friends and investors. And they are, you know, they're some of the most highly paid people in our company, and... You know, they're to me just so invaluable, those 3.
Highly paid and good
relationship. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think
good relationship builders.
Oh, my, they're amazing. And I think, I mean, they're the reason I don't have to be there every night.
Right.
So
because they spot.
That's correct. And, yes. You know, I think that a real mistake a lot of restaurants make is putting the most junior people at the door.
That's
like
yeah.
young girls and that are paid minimum wage or whatever it is, that, you know, they're the first line of defense. And it just, you know.
That is actually so true, yes. You have such so true. 2 different shapes and colors, stripes, polka dots, maitre d's, and then there is that weird hybrid of someone who's in, like, which I'm sure is some of these folks are insanely young but totally in the know.
And
that's amazing.
Well,
that
takes a lot of training, though. It really does. And, you know, the nice thing about San Francisco is, you know, it's a pretty small town. It doesn't quite take as much to kind of. No, and we have a lot of crossover with the 3 restaurants, but certainly there's a different clientele at each, and you'll see that as we run around town.
Okay, so this feels like, it's so beautiful and bright in here.
So this is, so, you know,
it feels
when you go
Instagram, a bowl in here.
Thank you, I'll take it. So, you know, when you go to our other 2 restaurants, you know, Park Tavern is a beautiful historic building. We wanted to be really true to it. The Cavalier, as you know, is British, and there is just, you know, and it's very kind of, the decor is very kind of old world and dark and moody. And I think I just needed like a breath of fresh air. So I was like, you know what? I'm sick of all this crap everywhere. I want to paint a restaurant white, and that's that. So that's this restaurant. And it's also, you know, we are, right now we're sitting in Soma,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of the technology, you know, hub
Twitter,
of the world.
Yep, is located,
exactly.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yep. And the Caltrain, which is 1 block away, which is kind of the connector from San Francisco to Silicon Valley. So, you know, definitely you're going to see a younger crowd in here.
Okay.
And, normally. And, so funny, I just said that and looked around the room and that was not the case at all. Don't listen to me, I just make it all up. I don't know.
Yeah. Cool, so then let's finish up here and then we...
You know what we're going to do? We're going to jump in an Uber and run over to Cavalier.
Yes, we are.
Cool.
Zoom, zoom.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small, from careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels, to lower barrel entry proof before heat-cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. And no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's cost be damned, taste is everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said, it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's, phenomenal. For more information, visit Michter's.com or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
Okay, we're now at the Cavalier.
We are. We're kind of doing this a little bit out of order.
Uber.
It was, yeah. We Ubered, we braved the San Francisco Giant baseball game traffic, and we are
it.
Now here.
We beat it.
Now we're sitting in the stables having a couple of civilized British cocktails.
Okay, so this is the stable.
So yeah, we have, so the Cavaliers is our London brasserie. Jen and I went to London 3 years ago, and we're so insanely inspired by the food scene there and the restaurant and design. And, you know, we didn't want to do like kind of a gastropub. We wanted to do what we felt was the grown-up version. You know, kind of like, I would even liken it to, you know, what happened in America 20 years ago when places like Gramercy Tavern really grew up the, you know, the tavern. So this, to me, is kind of a more of an elegant version of, it's a brasserie.
Yep, it's beautiful.
Thank you so much. Ken Falk, who's a wonderful partner of ours, is a fabulous, famous designer, did a beautiful job for us.
Okay, so we're in this little nook and cranny, and there's another nook and cranny.
We got lots like of nooks and crannies.
A little club.
Yeah,
that was so cute.
So it's called Marianne's, and it's named after Marianne Faithful because I've always been obsessed with her style. And I was just thinking, you know, if there was anywhere that I would ever want to be, it would be like in a private club and in the 60s with Marianne Faithful doing bad things. So that's what we kind of open.
Wow.
We have about 500 members, and they're kind of, you know, friends of the house.
So it's not even anything official. It's like
No, we just they get the code to the back door, and we send, you know, people kind of find out when we're open. We send them an email once a week and let them know if we're going to be open or if there's a private event. Our members can rent it for private events, which they do very often. And it's kind of my happy place.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite room.
Mm-hmm. And what are we drinking?
Okay. So she's drinking two drinks, just so y'all know.
I tried to make it seem like weird.
So we have the Bramble, which was actually created at Fred's Club in 1980. We've got a section of the cocktails called Club Cocktails, and they were first mixed at famous London clubs. So this was at the Fred's Club. It was made in 1980. It's Beefeater gin, lemon. So it's gin and lemon over crushed ice, and then you add a kind of a seasonal jam.
Mm-hmm.
So this one has strawberry and cherry cordial. And then
you
stir it all in, right?
It's so tart.
It's good, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other one is called the White Lady, which was first mixed in 1930 at the Savoy.
Mm-hmm.
It has gin, Creole shrub, egg white, and lemon. And I always call it the White Lady for white ladies.
Mm.
It's a white lady girl drink. It goes down way too easily. And then I am drinking. This is kind of mine and Jen's signature thing. It's called Chef Pink. And what that is it's basically rosé served in a bucket with a giant ice cube. And the reason we do this is because Jen and I would always have a glass in the boiling hot kitchen at the end of the night. So that's Chef Pink.
I love that.
Right? Something.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, we're actually in the process right now of private labeling our own rosé.
Mm.
It's going to be like a little fun present for Jen. It's going to be Big Night Chef Pink.
And it's going to be the kind of rosé that is perfectly balanced for you to drop a big old fancy ice cube in there.
We also believe that we're doing our part for the drought in California. We call it summer water. So we just don't drink water anymore. We just drink rosé. It works.
Wow. Okay, so your level of energy is just like actually inspiring to me. Like, I mean, just the way you handled that Uber driver and the way that you greeted me.
Oh no!
And then in contrast with your husband, it's like hilarious. I love
yeah.
it.
I think, yeah, I had, well, it's great. I mean, I really do need, yeah, he's amazing. He's so, he's really calm and kind of process oriented. And, you know, I definitely am a little bit on the crazier side. Although I will say I did pound a double espresso right before right before you and I met.
You wanted to be ready for...
I did want to be ready, yeah. You know, it's just... This is girls with companies. You've got to get shit done, right?
Yes. Well, you're doing your dream job stuff.
I am. I really am.
But what your first job? Tell me about it. Uh-huh.
So my dream job came out of me being a complete failure at my first dream, which was being an actress. Shitty actress. Like, I just was no good. I wasn't really committed. I kind of sucked. So, I lived in New Zealand. I did like a couple of like little soap operas and stuff. Absolutely nothing of note. And then I got a job on this kind of really, really budget channel, like a super budget MTV. So I was a VJ, and it was really funny because it was so low budget. I think we got paid like $10 an hour to be on TV, and you had to be your own producer as well, which literally meant kind of making sure the on-air button was on. Which apparently was just way too hard for me. So by the third time that there was like 10 minutes of dead air, I was fired. I didn't know it because it was before cell phones, so I just kept showing up, but I was fired.
Were you bummed out?
You know what? No, not really. I actually really... I was making a lot more money waitressing.
Uh-huh.
And frankly, I realized pretty early on that I just really preferred the environment. I love the camaraderie of restaurants. From the time I was really young, all I wanted to do was be in restaurants. They were just kind of magic places for me, yeah.
What did your mom and dad do?
Absolutely nothing. Like, my mother's like a double PhD. She's in education. Wow. My father's a lawyer. They think I'm batshit. But they do, my father's family, they are connected with the wine business. So we do have a collective love of wine and drinking, but no.
So what do they do in the wine business?
Well, so my father's family... own Villa Maria, which is a large winery, and my parents used to grow for Villa Maria. They don't anymore, but yeah, we as a family, we love to eat and drink, but the connection doesn't really go any further than that.
Intellectuals and farmers, kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Okay. So then
me.
And then at what age were you like, I like restaurants, extra lots?
I was about 17, mm-hmm. and I was sort of trying to act and every time that didn't work out, which was kind of all the time, you know, you have to support yourself with something. So I was waitressing, and I just, you know, I just loved it so much. And I kind of decided that I was going to move to New York. I'd read all about, at that time, New Zealand was quite parochial, the food scene. You know, you really wouldn't find a lot of wines from anywhere other than New Zealand or Australia. And I just wanted to be exposed to everything. So I'd read about all these restaurants, and my absolute dream was to work at Balthazar in New York, or work for Keith McNally, which I did when I first moved there. And so that was what prompted me to move to New York. Thanks, guys.
Wow. And we just got a whole...
We just had some food delivered to the table. And you'd said that you wanted to eat a little lighter here. So this is our version. You know, I'd said to you, we have an egg everywhere. This is our quail eggs mayonnaise, which I love. It's a little bite.
That is adorable.
And it's served with celery, salt, and crispy shallots. And you kind of do it like a shooter. And then this dish is one of my favorites. I kind of call it, it's like Jen's little love letter to me. Because, you know, those of you who grew up in England will know that, you know, eggs and soldiers are kind of something dear to my heart. So this is a riff on that. So she makes little hen egg hollandaise.
Mm-hmm.
And these little grilled cheese and prosciutto soldiers that you dip into it. And it's really, it's just delicious. It reminds me of my childhood. Except it tastes good because in my childhood it didn't taste good.
Really? So you had also toast in New Zealand?
Yeah, toast everywhere.
Yes, toast is the hot thing in San Francisco now.
Well, I mean, British cultures, I mean, my granny was, I think the only thing I ever ate with her was toast marmalade, so.
So... Let's see, and then we have these greens
and
that
then
look delightful.
Okay, you wanted to make sure. This is just super, super simple salad.
I just had to do my little Instagram photo. Who knows what's going to come out of tonight?
It's actually, this is a side. It's just grilled sugar snap peas with lemon zest and sea salt, just because they're great right now.
Yeah, that is course, beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, we have the heirloom tomato, our version of the heirloom tomato, and burrata salad. It's an English cucumber, lamb's lettuce, or marsh. And just a hint of lavender in the vinaigrette. So it's really, It's very light, very summery. Perfect with this rosé, in fact.
Mm-hmm. This is so good.
It's good, right?
I feel like
my son loves this. It keeps him quiet for hours.
Really?
Yeah, my son's too.
Wait, so your son is a real language lover, apparently.
Well, he's figured out how to do it. It was basically like we thought he was like a cute mute for a long time. And then just all of a sudden he started speaking, but in Spanish. So I actually have no idea what he's saying because Spanish sucks, but it's...
His Spanish is better than yours.
Spanish is a lot better than mine, yeah.
So what's his name? Leo. Mm-hmm. He has like the most blue eyes ever.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, he's a cutie. He's a good boy.
He's going to grow up to be a heartbreaker.
Oh, don't say that. I'm his mom. He'll never have a girlfriend ever. I hope.
Is that what moms like feel like?
No, I don't know.
I thought it was more of a dad thing.
Like... Whatever he wants. No, it's a dad thing with daughters. So
yeah.
No, it's fine. As long as she or he loves me, it's fine.
So then you started out in acting. That didn't really work out. And then you started to realize that, hey, restaurants work out really well.
So yeah, moved to New York. I worked for a bunch of different restaurateurs. I worked for Keith McNally, and then I worked for the amazing David Boulay.
Yep, all front of house stuff.
Yeah. I was bartender at Danube, which was kind of that crazy, amazing Austrian restaurant that looked like Klimt threw up in it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he's just, you know, to watch him cook is something else. And then I actually opened my own restaurant in New York with a female chef and a really great chef, actually, who owns her name is Melissa O'Donnell, and she has a restaurant on the Lower East Side called Thelma, so go there.
So you had a restaurant?
Yeah, I did. It was called Stella.
Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah, it was not long for this world, but I was really proud of it. It was really cute and sweet, and you know, we unfortunately opened right after 9/11.
Oh wow.
So that wasn't particularly good timing, but Melissa is still you know, a chef in New York City.
I'm going to totally go visit her.
You have to. Everybody should.
Thelma.
Food is like so soulful. It's named after her grandmother. She's the best. So.
Yeah. Okay. And then so how long was your restaurant?
So that lasted about 2 years.
Okay.
And then I was lucky enough to find Jonathan Waxman.
Okay.
And we talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was. You know, I opened Barbudo with him, which is, you know, still my favorite place in the world, as I said. And
was it strange going from being a restaurant owner to going back to...
You know, now it would be, but at the time I was a restaurant owner that really had no business being a restaurant owner.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know my ass from my elbow. I had no idea about financial responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was 23 years old, mm-hmm. and had somehow fallen into this great situation. And so, no, because I really didn't understand what it was to be a business owner. So I don't think I behaved any differently, which was part of the problem. Yeah.
Okay.
It was more like my little clubhouse. And unfortunately, you have to remember to charge people for shit. Or it doesn't work.
So good thing out of South, you and your husband partnered up.
Yeah.
And at that time, were you already married? You know, what was the conversation like? Or how did that all overlap?
Let me just think about this. No, we weren't married yet, but we knew we were getting married. We were engaged.
Okay.
You know, and it's funny, James will tell you, you know, the one thing his father always said was don't get into the restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a really successful, you know, technology career, and he kind of watched, you know, watched
James,
me struggle.
James comes from a technology family. Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, no real estate family, mm-hmm. but yeah, he definitely watched me struggle, but really believed and, you know, in me and Jen, and he really loved. He believed in the concept, and he was very, you know, he was very involved in,
mm-hmm.
in the concept of Marlo, and it would just kind of, it made sense. It was like, if we're going to do this, let's really do it. Let's make sure that we use, you know, our combined skills, you know, kind of your creative and concepting and Jen and his business know-how to make sure that this is, you know, we're not going to make the same mistakes again.
Yeah.
Because this was, you know, going to be the foundation of my career, and it's, you know, so wonderful that he was... You know, really so supportive.
Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, to be able to open three and restaurants in 5 years
Four. But for somebody to kind of, you know, let his own career take a back seat. I mean, now he loves it, but it really was really nice to have somebody that was totally kind of about helping me realize my dream.
Yeah.
And you, I loved this one quote I read that was like, Jennifer makes it great, you make it, what?
I don't know.
It was like a really good
quote.
I make
it fun?
Yeah, you make it
I make it nuts.
You make it nuts, and then...
So, I don't know, who was being quoted?
And then he makes it sustainable.
Totally. So, that sounds about right.
I think you guys are kind of like, I mean,
it's a great team. We really, I mean, the other thing is we genuinely like each other. We genuinely like spending time together. Okay, cool. It's just, I don't know, we have a good time. And then you're going to see, you're going to meet a bunch of the rest of the team when we head over to Park Tavern as well.
Wow.
So that'll be fun. We're going to run to North Beach.
So I just met Jennifer here. Her husband and she are dining here later on tonight.
Yep.
But it's like the three of you, though, Jennifer and you and James are like almost, you know,
we're a traveling circus. We're one of us tries to kind of be on one of the properties at, you know, most of the time.
Well, it's like a three-person marriage, but not really, but you know what I mean? Like, I wonder about Jennifer's husband. Like, what does he do?
He's in the restaurant business, too, and he's completely...
Really?
He's completely sane, so... No, he's great. He's lovely.
Oh, wait, what does he do? Like,
he is manager at 00, which is a really great restaurant here in San Francisco.
What? I've never been there before.
Oh, it's owned by Real Restaurants, which is Bill Higgins, who's a great friend of ours.
Yeah.
He has a bunch of great restaurants. He has Pico in Larkspur. Mm-hmm. He has Bix. Mm-hmm. Some of the real kind of San Francisco... Cisco standards.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, we're all in it.
So this, your son Leo, is he an eater?
He is. His favorite thing is, he says, cook, cook, cook. It's his favorite thing to do is cook. He is
he actually helps you out in the kitchen.
Yep, he sure does. He loves to do it. He's you know, I was really adamant about not raising a picky eater. From the time he was sort of 6 months old, he ate what we ate. And he does. He's got a good
foie
little
gras, caviar.
Well, you know, we don't necessarily have that for breakfast. No, no, I don't think he's had foie. He's had caviar before. He's had at the restaurant. But yeah. But I mean, like any kid, his favorite's still pizza. He's just lucky because he gets Delfina pizza. yeah.
So before we head off to Park Tavern, and so that we can finish stuffing our faces.
Yeah.
Your dream job, if in case the restaurant thing were not a thing. Come on.
What would it be?
Yeah, come on. Anything. No considerations whatsoever.
Gosh. That's a really good question. I mean, I'd love to do... I mean, food television would be really fun.
Oh, yeah.
It has to still be around food. That's food TV. There you go.
Okay.
I would, yeah. I want Gail Simmons' job.
Revisit back into the... what you start, you're marrying the
marrying
TV
exactly
and the food, and
that's right.
I could see
I kind of wanted to lie and say something really smarty pants, like, you know, be a professor of literature or something, but that's just not true.
Okay,
all right,
we're gonna finish up our deviled or pale eggs.
We're gonna do our pale eggs mayonnaise and our little cheesy soldiers.
Oh my god, they're so great.
And then we're gonna head to gorgeous North Beach.
Fantastic.
Great.
Park Tavern.
Last stop on the big night train.
Stop number three.
Yes.
Three is the magic number.
Yeah. So we're at Park Tavern, which is probably our biggest restaurant.
And I've never been here before.
Oh, welcome. I love Park Tavern. I especially love this neighborhood. This is North Beach, which to me is truly old San Francisco.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So we're right on Washington Square Park, and you know, I can't believe how lucky we are that we have this space. So
it's Washington Square Park. That's funny. There's like one in both cities, New York and San Francisco.
Uh huh. Exactly.
Okay. So what's this whole?
So So I would say the Park Tavern is very much our, you know, it's very much our American tavern. So you know, if I had to liken it to a restaurant in New York, I would hope it'd be something, you know, like kind of Gramercy Tavern. This is definitely a kind of a restaurant where people come for all occasions. You'll find a lot of San Francisco families here. We do a lot of graduations, a lot of celebrations,
wow,
which makes me really happy for the people who choose to celebrate with us.
And it's very much an all-American tavern.
You know what's been amazing is that at all of your different establishments, you really somehow understand, like, what clientele needs to be there.
Yeah, you know, when we took over the Park Tavern space, it was really, the whole of this neighborhood was really kind of boarded up. It was just post-recession. And I just simply couldn't believe that this beautiful kind of restaurant was just, nothing was happening here. And we were sort of starting to come out of the recession, and I just felt like this neighborhood really needed like a clubhouse again. And again, it feels much more old San Francisco, you know, as opposed to Marlowe and Cavalier, which are very much in the heart of new San Francisco. So it's a nice juxtaposition. This is the kids from Marlowe's parents eating here. So yeah, so we've got a table
full of the parents of Marlowe's kids.
Yeah, yeah. The kids are at Marlowe. The grown ups are at Park Tavern.
Okay. Yeah. I like feeling like
it's a fun bar scene though. Like it's definitely our biggest bar, and you know we've got great North Beach bartenders who are kind of beloved in the neighborhood. So yeah, it's fun place.
Okay, so. Let's see. What do we have here on the table?
Okay, so what we're doing is, so first of all, I'm going to totally bust you, because on our Uber across town, we had Ronies.
Okay,
we did. We bought our Brambles. We bought our cocktail slushies across town. So now we're done with those. We have two of the signature kind of Park Tavern cocktails.
Which, by the way, I have to call you out because I don't usually even do that.
I do.
But it was actually so delicious. I can't waste a seasonal strawberry jam.
It was fun. We had a really great San Francisco moment going up and down the hills in an Uber with gin slushies. It was awesome.
And Uber is now a crucial part of San Francisco.
I know. Uber is a huge part of my life, that's for sure. So, so what we have, what have we got on the table? So we're drinking two things. We're drinking a McLaren, which is what part of our parks and recreational drinking section of our cocktail list. McLaren is a park here in the city. It's Hendrix gin, cucumber, lemon, and ginger beer. Super refreshing. We serve it by the pitcher. Easy drinking, delicious summer drink. And then you have the Double Isaac, which is kind of like a really fun, spicy, pickly margarita. And it's Blanco tequila, lemon juice, spiced agave, bitters, and a little mezcal.
It's really like it's like a tequila with a savory.
And then the final cocktail we have here on the table is called the Red Dragon, and that's a kind of a favorite of mine. And she won't mind me telling the story, but that is named after Adrian Denning, who is our fabulous maitre d' here, who has the most gorgeous red hair.
And you have such the most amazing maitre d' at all of your restaurants.
So what's really funny is she had this one Yelp that this person called her the Red Dragon on the door.
Wow.
Owned it, and we loved it, and so we created a cocktail for her. And so her nickname in the company is RD now. It's a Red Dragon, so it's cool. And then we have, for food, we've got the PT fries, which are... So this dish came about 1 o'clock in the morning on New Year's Eve. Just after New Year's Eve, me and Jen had, like, everyone had just kind of cleared out. We were sitting at the bar having a glass of wine. And I was like, I'm hungry. Jen said, what do you want? I'm like, I want French fries and caviar and mayonnaise. And she's like, okay. So she went and made me a soft-boiled egg with caviar, French fries, and mayonnaise, and we sat at the bar and drank bourbon and ate it.
Oh my god!
And had our little New Year's Eve moment after everyone had gone.
So I'm gonna try that. So wait, there's an egg filled with caviar.
Yep. And then the aioli is truffle.
Holy. I'm nom nom. Okay, you two love eggs.
We do. We like eggs. And then. We've got the soft shell crab, which is just delicious and in season right now, with kimchi, black garlic aioli, tomato, and chives.
Yep. And then your favorite ever deviled eggs.
Oh yeah. So God, it sounds like all we do is eat eggs. So these are the Park Tavern deviled eggs, which are my favorite. And they are cold as opposed to the hot ones. Marlowe with bacon, pickled jalapeno, and chive.
Wow.
Oh, and then the last thing is we've got some crispy lemon chips, so there's slices of lemon deep fried in rice bran oil with burrata for dipping.
That is brilliant.
You want a little spoon? There you go.
I am going to spoon that burrata.
So that's what we're eating and drinking at Park Tavern.
These are classic dishes, but with such fun twists.
Thank you.
And very, very craveable.
Right. Well, again,
these lemon chips are like the acidity, the and the aroma really offsets that that friedness.
Yeah.
So you feel like you need like a million of them.
Well, you can. Well, and rice bran oil is a very Jen works with rice bran oil a lot. It's a very clean. It's a very clean oil to fry with. So you know, hey, it's still fried. Don't get me wrong, but it's definitely here.
This is fantastic. Okay, so what is it? What is it about the perfect deviled egg to you? Like, since you're a deviled eggs fanatic.
What I love about them, you know, is it's a finger food, but it's definitely they're kind of filling, so it's good if you've been drinking. And I just love that eggs are such a great vehicle for flavor, right? For salt and pickle and all the things that I like, eggs are a perfect vehicle. So
you and Jennifer go on some pretty fun vampire trips.
We do.
In order to make sure that you're new.
So I'll tell you a secret that I don't think I have. So we have this thing that we do. We do like a weigh-in before we leave, like the airport. So we do a weigh-in, and we start in jeans, and then we count the days till we're in stretchy pants. It's like, can we wear yoga pants to this restaurant? Because my jeans don't fit me. So yeah, we have a good time.
Okay, so I mean, does your weight really change?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
I mean, think about, we're ingesting like 10,000 calories a day. We go on like, I mean, seriously, between the alcohol and the food and 7 restaurants a day, it's fun. But then when we get home, we have to kind of go on like a juice cleanse.
Yeah, you want is green juice.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when you're doing these kind of trips, you often, you know, you're not going to order like a simple salad. Otherwise, what's the point? You're going to order the crazy fried bone marrow, whatever the hell it is, the signature dish at whatever restaurants are kind of really to really learn and get a sense of things. So the grossest one that we did was a brunch research trip, because Jen and I both don't actually like brunch. It's funny, we eat eggs at night, but we don't like brunch.
Breakfast is a new black.
I like breakfast, I don't like brunch.
I understand.
I hate, because I mean, everybody that's worked in a restaurant is gonna, you know, knows what I'm saying. Like, it's just, it's a gross shift to work.
It's gross.
So crazy.
People are the grossest.
And well, you're also just like handling like eggy dishes, and it is what it is. I mean, it's, I don't even love going to brunch. Frankly, if brunch just disappeared, I'd be okay. But anyway, so we did this research trip. So, you know, we were in New York, and, you know, can you imagine going from, I mean, in amazing places. Like, we went from Cook Shop to Minetta to Five Points to all these different places, and Blue Ribbon Bakery. And it was just, like, fucking disgusting. Excuse my language. It's like another Bloody Mary, another plate of pancakes. So, anyway, one we won't do again.
I'm surprised you were able to ingest so many eggs.
I don't know.
The eggs, they're like, they're constantly delicious at your places, but they're the things where you...
Yeah, I don't think I could stand the sight of an egg for, you know, a year afterwards.
So what was the brunch call for?
Oh, that was actually right before opening Park Tavern, because we do, the restaurant we're sitting in right now, you know, given that we're in this great historical neighborhood and we're right on the park, you know, we do a wonderful, like a really, really huge brunch business, so... Mm-hmm. We wanted to make sure that, you know, San Francisco is not really a super huge brunch town, and I really wanted it to feel like those super buzzy brunch spots in New York that I used to frequent when I was living there.
Yeah. 10 years.
Which is, I don't think I was ever up at brunch time then. But anyway, so that's what that was for. I really wanted this to feel like those places.
Okay, so what's next? New baby,
oh God,
new restaurant,
stop.
Anything that we should...
She just said new baby, and one of our team members walked by and went, no new baby. Okay, fine. Okay, go.
We have to bake cakes.
Next would be...
Yeah, like what do we have to look forward to from the vampire?
I want to do a bar next. We want to do a bar.
Okay.
Watch the space.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
That was a big night. Thank you, Anna, for the grand tour. That was just Anna Weinberg, San Francisco powerhouse restaurateur behind acclaimed places of deliciousness, Marlowe the Cavalier and Park Tavern.
If you love what you hear, do connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm at Leitisu, that's L-E-I-T-I-H-S-U. We're at Heritage_Radio. And share with us using the hashtag WOMSHOW, W-O-M-S-H-O-W, which is short for Word of Mouth Show. You can also hit subscribe and listen to the show anytime, anywhere through iTunes or Stitcher. And if you're enjoying yourself, I'd be so happy if you rate and review us on iTunes. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're live 2 p.m. Eastern, Wednesdays, Word of Mouth on heritageradionetwork.org. And thank you also to my fabulous sound engineer, Liz Smith, holding down the fort in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Leiti. Until next time, I hope that you eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.